welcome to the last House of Commons for a little while. Politics is moving so quickly. We will do some specials when we feel that they are warranted. But right now, the three of us have all got things that we want to talk about besides Brexit, and we're not sure 2019 is going to let us do that. I am here and joined, I'm Emma Burnell, political journalist, and joined as always by Mark Thompson. Hello, Mark.
Hello.
And Nick Dennis. Hello, Nick.
Hello, Merry Christmas and Happy New Year, and let's have an amazing 2000 and successful 19.
Absolutely.
I'm laughing, by the way.
So, well, maybe personally, I'm not entirely sure anyone politically successful.
Yes, that's true.
2019, I'm not sure what that even looked like. So, yeah, 2018. How was that for you, Nick?
Oh, well, on a personal level, it was very, very good, to be honest. I had a pretty good year. The birth of my second daughter was the absolute massive highlight, and did a load of bunch of stuff around sort of my geeky future of work and employment rights stuff. A lot of that was quite successful. So on a personal level, I had an extremely good year. But obviously on a political level, I don't know if it can get any more depressing, because when things have reached the bottom, they seem to have gone further down even worse. So which is why I think the three of us are thinking of having a break from doing the podcast, because ultimately every single couple of weeks while we were doing it, we were talking about the same stuff and nothing seemed to be getting better. And we sort of thought the corner must be turned soon, and it hasn't. So on a personal level, I've had a really great year. On a political level, meh.
I think in terms of the politics, I would say the Conservatives have probably had a better year than they had last year, but then, I guess just put the election was such a massive.
It was. I suppose how I'd describe it, Emma, is last year we had a bigger shock. We've had less of a bigger shock this year, but the trajectory has still been downwards. So, yeah.
Well, less good year than last year, because the election was a pleasant surprise for us, even if we didn't win it. Whereas this year we've gone back to lots of nasty infighting, some very, very disgusting behaviours by a small minority, but enough of them for it to have been both a pattern and a pattern that was so badly dealt with that nobody comes out with any glory at all. So the anti-Semitic crisis, plus some of the ongoing disciplinary incidents around sexual harassment, nobody looks good. So I would say the Party's 2018 was worse than the Labour Party's 2017.
Well, before we get to Mark, one thing I'd like to ask you, Emma, as a sort of Labour supporter. Obviously, the Conservatives are having essentially an existential crisis at the moment, and it seems to be getting worse and worse and worse. And it's been a really tough year as a Conservative. But ultimately, we're still neck and neck, or maybe even slightly ahead in the polls. And I know people don't look at the polls overly accurately, but ultimately, we are absolutely shambolic at the moment, but Labour haven't built on their election success and sort of stride forward. Is that a fair comment?
Yeah, I think that is a fair comment. And I mean, I think the answer you'll get depends on who in the party you ask. I think we could and should be further ahead of the Conservatives. But I do also think that it is a fair response that you'll get from the more Corbyn supporting wing of the party that would say, well, yes, but when we go into a general election campaign and the media coverage rules change and Jeremy's out there doing what he's good at, which is being on the campaign trail, you'll see him turn around again the way he did in 2017. There's no answer to that, because that's exactly what happened and it wasn't expected. Whether it will happen twice, I don't know. But I can't say I don't know. I know that it won't happen, if you see what I mean. So we're kind of in a stalemate where people who don't like Jeremy Corbyn just simply say we should be doing better. People who do like Jeremy Corbyn simply say we'll be fine. And people who are a bit in the middle and don't sort of have a strong opinion either way are a bit stuck because there's nothing. There is. There will be no movement, and the answer has to stop being about whoever it is that sits at the top and start being much more broader and more interesting.
So, Mark, you're not a Lib Dem anymore. You're sort of a political interested person who doesn't particularly have a home. But has 2018 been an interesting political year for you?
Well, a little bit like yourself, Nick. I mean, personally, I've had some very interesting stuff going on. I quit my job and I've set up a company, and I'm actually in the middle of creating some software. And that's one of the reasons why I'm going to have to kind of step back from doing this regularly, because I'm mad busy trying to get a piece of software released, and then I'll be trying to sell it and support it. So, but politically, like, it's just been an absolute shit show. I mean, it's just unbelievable how rapidly the political situation in this country has degraded. And I would like to think that even if I'd voted Leave, I would still think the same. I think one of the real problems we've now got is that things have become very polarized, and it's all filtered through this prism of whether you were a Remainer or a Leaver. It's almost like you've got these very, very sharply drawn lines, and which political tribe do you now belong to? And, you know, I constantly see people on Twitter dismissing the views of other people simply because they either voted Remain if they're a Leaver, or they voted Leave if they're a Remainer. And I think that's a very, very unhealthy place for us to be in as a country. In some ways, I kind of wish I voted Leave, not because I want us to leave, but just because it would then mean I would have, in the eyes of the people who voted Leave, I'd have some legitimacy into the input of the discussion about what should happen next. Whereas because I voted Remain, I'm just seen as, well, you voted Remain, so we're not interested in your opinion, mate. And I, that's such a terrible place to be in, because you can't just completely disenfranchise almost half the population and expect things to go well over the next few years, few decades. You know, this is such a major decision. And I think there are a lot of people now, and I've heard people, even people who aren't interested in politics, you know, talking to people over Christmas period, friends and family. And I've tried to stay off politics, to be honest, but because I'm involved in it and I talk about it on the radio and so forth, I inevitably get asked the question, so Mark, what about this Brexit thing then? And I kind of, there've been a few occasions when I've been drawn into discussions about it. And lots of people seem to have lots of sympathy for Theresa May. That's come across several times. I have less sympathy for her, because I think, although she wasn't dealt a great hand, she's played it atrociously badly. I mean, we must have talked about this before on the podcast. I think it's coming to its climax, isn't it? In the next few weeks, few months. I mean, you know, one way or another, It has to play out now. And her favourite political game is kicking things into the long grass. I wouldn't be totally shocked if somehow this process is extended. And we're all thinking that March 29th is the final day for this. You know, one way or another, we'll either have a deal or we won't have a deal. But one way or another, we'll be leaving. I wouldn't be surprised if we don't, that something happens towards the run-up to that in the last few weeks, even few days, and we end up extending Article 50 because we just simply aren't ready. If you look at the pattern of what Theresa May has done over the last couple of years, every single time there's been a decision point, she's fudged it and she's found a way to blur the situation, and we'll kick the can down the road a few more weeks or a few more months.
In a funny way, Mark, the decision's no longer hers. I mean, the decision is sort of the Tory party's and also maybe Parliament's. I mean, she's put on the table that the deal is the deal. And this is, you know, either you have a choice between Remain, the deal, or no deal. And she's sort of sticking very firmly to that. I mean, she's managed to get some extra language around the Irish backstop. But obviously the EU are not going to offer any more. So in a funny way, she doesn't have any decision anymore. I mean, the real decision, I think, is, are the sort of Eurosceptic wing of the Conservative Party going to go down in history as the people who stopped Brexit from happening by not allowing a form of Brexit which isn't their form of Brexit, you know, trying to sort of capture the 52% vote, shall we say, to mean exactly what they think it should mean, when obviously the 52% people who voted Leave left voted for many, many different reasons? Or is the sort of, shall we say, the Remain majority in Parliament, or the majority in Parliament who certainly don't want no deal, are they going to essentially push through Theresa May's deal or another sort of maybe sort of more sort of connected to the EU version deal in order to avoid no Brexit?
But I think she's got more. I think she's got more power than you're suggesting, though, because we've seen this in the last few weeks, actually. In that I think the ERG thought they were in a more powerful position than they ultimately were. And they overplayed their hand and they went too early and they weren't able to depose her. They did get a sizable number of votes, but it wasn't enough. In fact, it was nowhere near enough, given that she'd said on record she would stay even if she won by one vote. I don't know. Maybe she would have done, maybe she wouldn't, although, you know, she stayed after the election where she lost seats, so maybe she would have done. But the fact that she won by, you know, a decent-ish margin, you know, you could argue about how decent it was, but it's not like it was 51-49. It was a clear 60-odd% that she got. And so she's safe in her position for a year now. And so the only way you could get rid of her outside of that is by no confidence in the government. And, you know, that's like, you know, kind of very, very high stakes, isn't it? A kind of, you know, face-off kind of game theory situation that you've got there. I don't think that the Tory party ultimately are going to bring their own government down. And therefore, I think she's got quite a lot of room to manoeuvre. And I think if it did get to, say, late February or early to mid-March, and she said, you know what, we need more time, we need to extend Article 50, I think she would have the votes in Parliament for that, because I don't think anyone else really knows what else to do. And she loves kicking the can down the road. And I wouldn't be at all surprised to see it happen. I think if anything, that's the most likely thing I can see happening in the next 2 or 3 months, because I can't see how any one individual plan gets through the Commons.
So I think, Emma, what's really interesting is actually I think Labour potentially the most powerful or influential party at the moment when it comes to the type of Brexit we can get. So what are Labour going to do then? What do they want?
The stated position is that we want a general election, but we're not very clear about what will be in the manifesto. So, I'm not sure that a general election that decides between two very similar flavours of Brexit is all that compelling. If we don't get a general election, then we push all other options, including a people's vote, are on the table.
Mark's right, you're not going to get a general election. I really can't see Conservative MPs, voting for that. I mean,
I think we have to get past the first meaningful vote. After which they can call for a vote of no confidence, which they won't win, then they have to go to the other options. I think that's the way the dominoes have to fall for Labour's internal party management. And what we're seeing is stuff that is incredibly important for the next 100 years of our country being run through the internal party management structures of both Tories and Labour. It kicked off because of internal Tory party management and their fear of UKIP. And neither side are covering themselves in glory, because what they're focused on is their short-term internal party problems rather than what is actually the thing to do that would be best for the country.
But is it a case like within the Tory party, there are people who care passionately about Brexit, who really, this is, you know, I suggest some of the ERG lot, I mean, they don't care if the Tory party is ripped apart as long as they get Brexit, because Brexit is the most important thing for whatever reason. So the internal party problems within the Conservative Party are very much, you know, EU related. I mean, it doesn't strike me that within the Labour Party, the internal party problems have anything to do with Brexit or the EU. Brexit and the EU just happens to be the sort of environment that they exist in.
No, I don't think that's fair. I think there are two types of people who are fighting Brexit within the Labour Party. Those like myself, for whom the key issue is Brexit's a really shit idea, we shouldn't do it. If we have to do it, we need to do it in the softest way possible, with the longest glide in, etc., just to make sure that we have the least amount of friction in trade. That is my priority. I don't give a shit who leads it. You can be led by Jeremy Corbyn. It can be led by Theresa May. You know, the important thing is the issue. There are others for whom always hated Corbyn and they just see it as a way to kick him. On the other side, there are people who, in any normal given circumstances, would be anti-Brexit, but because they put Corbyn first, they are not willing to be anti-Brexit because they believe that's disloyal to him. And on the other hand, there are people who just genuinely believe that the EU is a capitalist club and we should leave it, and they've always believed that and they haven't changed their minds. In the middle is the vast majority of Labour Party members, the vast majority of whom are anti-Brexit, who are quite happy with Jeremy's direction in terms of the policies of the Labour Party, but are a bit disappointed with the way he's behaving on Brexit.
But it's the biggest political issue of our generation. So I don't really understand how you can be a Labour member and maybe you voted for Corbyn and maybe you're kind of generally happy with the other stuff, but you're all right with the fact that he's basically a Brexiter, and every single time he's had the opportunity to draw some clear lines here and actually take things in a different direction, he's manifestly refused to do that. And in fact, he even said the other day that if Labour wins another general election, we'll still be leaving the EU.
To talk about Brexit, they join the Labour.
Mm. And how's homelessness going to be improved by crashing out of the EU? I mean,
I agree with you. You're having the fight with the wrong person. But what I'm saying to you is that their priority structure doesn't have Brexit built into it in that central way. So they're happy to stay in a Labour. You know, they will say, I don't want to leave the EU. But that doesn't mean that they're going to leave the Labour Party, even if they're a bit disappointed in the way the Labour Party is behaving on Brexit.
Mm. I find that a very strange position for people to take.
Well, I mean, that's because you're a Lib Dem.
Well, I'm not.
You have very different priority structures. People who join the Labour Party because of passionate injustice over domestic issues don't see that one step removed that you and I are both seeing as the damage that Brexit will probably do to the causes they want to see. Because what they're already seeing is those causes being ultimately and horrifically played out on our streets.
I mean, they ultimately blame evil Tories and political austerity, don't they? So their idea is to get, you know, no matter the Brexit stuff obviously is important up to a point, but to get a Labour government in to stop evil Tories and to reverse austerity Brexit. I think I can sort of understand where they're coming from. I agree with you ultimately, Mark, though. I mean, you know, the best way to build a strong and fair and successful country is to have a strong and stable economy. And I just can't see how that's going to happen over the next 5 years with everything that's going on. So, you know, I mean, a lot of stuff with Brexit, I think, and the EU debate, because it doesn't directly affect you in an everyday sort of way, it allows people to ignore what it really is, which is one of the reasons, I think, probably why, you know, Leave was able to cobble together a coalition of all the dissatisfied, whatever the dissatisfactions were. And because it's complicated, because it's boring, essentially, as well, and because it's really unknown, it still allows people to sort of hide away from it.
Well, one of the reasons why, as you mentioned earlier on, Nick, that we're going to kind of step back from doing these regularly is because we do just keep repeating ourselves. And I know I've said this before, but I'm going to say it again, because I think it's really important. We are in the middle of the biggest constitutional crisis that we faced in my lifetime, and I think for perhaps several generations. Obviously, the Second World War was an existential crisis for the country. But even then, constitutionally, I think we were in better shape than we are now, because we've had a situation where a referendum has gone against what the government of the day wanted, and our system simply cannot cope with it. It can't cope with it. And that's why we're seeing the absolute mess that we're currently in. And I think it's going to take years, if not decades, to unwind all of this. Frankly, I'm actually less concerned about leaving the EU than I am about the constitutional mess that we're in as a result of what's happened. What astonishes me, I shouldn't be astonished, but I am, is that barely anyone seems to even recognise that. Like most people, when you talk to them, it's just really about, are we going to stay? Are we going to leave? Did you vote Remain? Did you vote Leave? Those MPs are a bunch of twats. And it's like, hang on. And I've tried to talk to people who aren't interested in politics. I've tried to strip things back. I was actually out playing poker the other night, and the guy sitting next to me said, "What about this Brexit then? What do you think? These MPs are a bunch of shits, aren't they? Why can't they just get on with it?" And I said, "Well," and I started trying to talk. I said, "How much do you know about our constitution?" And it was like, he looked at me like I was mad. And it's like, this is one of the reasons why trying to settle issues like this via a referendum is so dangerous, because you can't expect people to understand all of the ramifications of voting yes or no on something like this. And I just despair for where we're going to end up as a result of this. People that trust in politics and trust in our body politic more generally is absolute rock bottom. It was already bad anyway. It's much worse now.
Can I be optimistic? Because I'm a naturally optimistic person in all situations. I annoy a hell of a lot of people that surround me because I'm always optimistic ultimately in the end. I mean, maybe what this will lead to is an extremely literate and aware political generation. You know, maybe the generation that we're part of and above us, we're sticking our heads in the sand. Obviously, we and the three of us aren't, because we like talking about these matters all the time. But maybe what will happen is, yes, there is going to be trouble and there is going to be fallout. But ultimately, the generation below me, my generation, they are a lot more political. They are a lot more aware than my generation ever were in general. So maybe out of the ashes of this sort of, why can't they do it? It's too complicated. But you voted for it. But yeah, I voted for it. I wanted them to do it, but you can't just do it sort of thing. Maybe we will sort of end up building a sort of stronger, better country. But that's my optimism. I've no proof of that. That's my optimistic take.
No, if you don't mind my saying it, that's a very Tory way of thinking about it. It's kind of political creative destruction that you're describing there. Whereby you basically have to bring down the old order in order to rise phoenix-like from the ashes in a much better state. I admire your optimism. I fear it's going to get worse.
I think the problem with that kind of approach is the people at the very, very sharpest end are the ones who'll suffer the most going through the destruction period.
Exactly. It's like posh boys playing with other people's lives, and it won't really affect them.
I mean, I spend some time over Christmas doing crisis, and yeah, I see our guests. So this is my third year running, and some of them are returning guests, and some of them aren't. And yeah, the statistics are quite bare. I believe rough sleeping has gone up 6 times since 2010, and that's it's horrendous. And it, and the stuff that I see, and my guests are great, and we have a lovely time with them, and we just give them a nice week. We give them advice and support, and a decent meal, and karaoke, and football. And I have to dance with all of the the guys, because once you dance with one, you can't play. But you come away from there just feeling, and that's what I mean about the Labour Party member who doesn't prioritise Brexit, because actually when you're walking down the street and you walk past, I mean, I think I walked past 5 or 6 homeless people in the 20-minute walk from my station to my house. And that's why I joined the Labour Party. That's those social justice issues. Now, I know, because I'm very deep in the weeds on it, how much more of an effect that the economy crashing after Brexit will have on those people. But that doesn't mean that I'm going to run off and join some centrist party that just wants to stop Brexit and has no social justice aspect to it. I'm happier with the Labour Party's domestic policy agenda than I have been for a long time. I just worry about our ability to implement any of it post-Brexit.
Just as a little aside, Jen Williams, who's the political and social affairs editor of the Manchester Evening News, has done some excellent work on that subject you're just talking about. Anyone who doesn't follow her, I think she's Jen Williams MEN on Twitter.
Yes, I think she's a great journalist.
Yeah, she's brilliant. And and she often retweets stuff from other people in other regions as well, like Yorkshire and so forth, that are dealing with similar issues. I get what you're saying. When I first got involved in politics about 10 or so years ago, I was banging on about drug policy and evidence-based policy and civil liberties. And I look back at that stuff now and I just think, if only I'd known like what was coming. I haven't talked about any of that stuff for a very long time. And I very occasionally mention electoral reform, but even that's just pissing in the wind. But there's just like all of that stuff that I cared so deeply and passionately about is just like, almost seems like it doesn't really matter very much at the moment, because we're so far away from being anywhere near being able to get a handle on any of those things while all of this stuff's going on. And it's not just Brexit, it's that obviously Trump in America, and we're seeing that kind of pattern start to be replicated in other countries as well. And Tommy Robinson is on the rise in this country. It wouldn't at all shock me to see a movement that he or someone like him heads in the next few years do very, very well in this country. It seems like whichever way we now jump, whether we actually leave the EU and then, things go really bad economically, or we somehow remain in the EU and then there's a massive stab in the back thing that starts up, I think one way or another, we're going to see the rise of the right in this country. And, it just feels like a slow motion train crash that we can't do anything about. And the idea that I'm going to be pissing about thinking about legalizing drugs and civil liberties and changing the electoral system is just for the birds. I think probably for the rest of my life, I'm just going to have to park all that stuff. You know, and I think it's probably a little bit similar to some of the stuff that you're talking about, Emma. I'm not saying you're going to park all of that stuff. I'm sure you're still pushing it and you're going to come back to it again and again. But we've got to get past this other stuff before we've got any real chance of getting that stuff on the agenda. It's just sucked the oxygen out of everything, as Cameron promised it would, and it has done.
A crashed economy makes it a lot harder to redistribute wealth.
Yeah.
Not least because there's a fair amount of the people who won't suffer at all keep their wealth hidden offshore.
Yeah.
You know, they have very creative ways of not having their wealth redistributed, and other people dedicate their lives to helping them. But that doesn't mean that I will stop thinking that these things are a priority and important. Mm. I also want to stand campaigning to stop Brexit, and then campaigning to give people another say. But that doesn't mean, but I don't do that in a vacuum. I don't do that because, just because I think the EU is the one and only issue. I do it because all the other issues I care about flow from it.
I mean, I think I've said on this podcast before, I actually don't want a second referendum. I think that would just make things worse. And I think we actually do need to leave. I just want us to leave on relatively soft terms and maintain as many, you know, commonalities and structures as we can. I think if we don't leave, I just think it will just get worse and worse. And even if we had another referendum and it was 52-48 in favour of Remain, or even 55-45, I don't think you can pool your sovereignty with all these other countries if, you know, you don't have a decent majority of people who are behind it.
I think it's going to get worse anyway, and my way, we don't crash the economy off a cliff.
I know, and I've seen that argument, and I do understand that argument. I just think from where we are now, I think we have to leave. Maybe we rejoin in 20 years' time, but I think we have to leave. Sadly, very sadly.
I think so. I think the result of the referendum has to be respected. And when I say it has to be respected, it even has to be respected. I apply that equally to the extreme end of the Brexiteers who believe it gives them a mandate to do something that completely doesn't give them a mandate to do. I mean, the thing I find funny about the Brexiteers on the ERG wing is when it mattered in the referendum campaign, they're very happy to campaign on spending more money on the NHS and giving people back control. But now the election's all over. They seem to have forgotten all of that and believe that Brexit should be, you know, something completely different. I think we should leave. We should leave orderly. It should be people should respect, and I'm talking about the people in power who know about these things, all of them, people should respect the fact that leaving is probably going to be a long and slow process because we've been part of this institution for 40 years. And, you know, it should really be, I would think, probably about a 10-year timeline in terms of leaving fully from the EU. And then we should give it a go and see what happens. And obviously, you know, as Mark alluded to in mentioning Trump and other things, I mean, the world is changing at such a rapid pace at the moment. Who knows where the world's going to be in 10 years' time, and who knows what's going to be needed.
So what did you think about the Queen's piano then?
Well, to make a serious point about the Queen's piano, it just shows you how stupid social media is. And if you'd spend time off social media for a little while, a break for a week or whatever, you realise that most of the real world who don't talk about social media have a lot more balanced view of politics. But unfortunately, the vast majority of politicians and journalists spend a lot of time on social media, which means stupid opinions and anger gains a lot of traction.
I'm not a Republican because the Queen has a gold piano.
I am. That's exactly why. I want a gold piano and I haven't got one, and therefore it's the absolute politics of envy. I am a Republican as well, like Emma, and you know, what if people only just noticed that she's very wealthy? I thought the optics were terrible. Yeah, well, she's banging on about poverty during her speech while surrounded by just a load of bling, and it's like maybe they could have put her in a room that had less gold things in. Maybe they'll think about that next time.
Sure,
but beyond that, I don't think it has any relevance. that was the least gold festooned room she could find.
That's the poor room.
I have to admit, I'm not a Republican. I certainly am. You know, I talk about all this constitutional upheaval. I don't want to get rid of the monarchy. Certainly not. But I actually didn't watch the Queen's speech because I never normally do, because I'm normally out walking at that time.
I didn't watch it. I just saw the pictures. I never watch it.
Yeah, well, indeed. Well, that's very social media, isn't it? Everyone talking about it, but no one watched it. Everyone having an opinion.
So actually, just before we're going to wrap up in a minute, aren't we? But just before we do, what were your best presents that you got, Emma?
I got one of the Monkey Island games.
Ooh, I don't even know what that is.
Oh, it's a series of computer games that I really like by my favourite computer game designer. And
okay.
And fun, and I got one of those. And I got a screenwriting course.
Ah, very good.
Cool.
How about you, Nick?
So, basically books. I hardly get any presents nowadays, which is fine, but main presents I do get are clothes and books. Mm. So, I'm currently halfway through already Half a Life by V.S. Naipaul, which is very good. And I'm looking forward to reading The Myth of Capitalism by Jonathan Tepper and Denise Hearn, among others. So yeah, my next few months of reading is completely sorted. Yeah. How about you, Mark?
Very worthy, Nick. I got a few books. I actually yesterday, in less than 12 hours, I read an entire book, which I haven't done in years. I just sat in front of the fire. We went out and did a few bits and bobs, but in the morning I sat in front of the fire and read it, and then in the evening I just stayed up and finished it. It was James O'Brien's book. It's called How to Be Right in a World Gone Wrong. Yeah. Very, very good. Very digestible stuff.
My 4-year-old Florence, she asked me. She said, "Daddy, what do you want Father Christmas to bring you for Christmas?" And I said, "What I'd love is basically time to read my books."
Yeah.
And she looked at me and said, "That Father Christmas can't bring you that."
But actually, the best present that I received was from my friend Ben, who never normally sends me presents, but he sent me this one. He must have found it in a second-hand bookshop. The number one bestseller by Nadine Dorries, The Angels of Lovely Lane. It's 1953 and five girls are arriving at the nurse's home in Lovely Lane, Liverpool, to start their training at St. Angela's Hospital. So he very deliberately bought it secondhand because he doesn't want to put any money into her pocket. She's actually his local MP where he lives. So I think he sent me that as an hilarious joke. So the fire That's could nice. Do with some kindling, so it's all good.
So just before we finish, what is your one out there prediction for next year? Nick, what's the one thing that nobody's expecting that you think happen?
Oh, my one out there prediction is that Brexit will happen and it will basically be Theresa May's deal. They'll get signed off, maybe not until June or something.
So after Article 50 is ended?
Yeah, but it might be extended for a little bit, I don't know. Mark? I don't know, who knows?
I mean, I've already said that I think it's quite likely that Article 50 will be extended, so I won't say that one. But I think that it might be clear by the end of next year that Trump isn't going to run for re-election. I don't think he wants to. I think he's probably sick of
he's
this.
He's been handing out Trump's 2020 caps, hasn't he, to the...
Yeah, yeah. But how often has Trump said and done something and then done a 180-degree U-turn without even blinking? Like, it doesn't matter what he says now. It's what he...
Every single minute of every
day. It's what he does when the point actually comes where he has to make the decision. And I think he might just decide he doesn't want to do it. He'll come up with some bullshit as to why, but it'll be because he thinks he's going to lose. I suspect he won't.
You say that, but if it looks like he'll be indicted as soon as he's a citizen again, that's the biggest incentive to run again.
Yes, you are right. And that might be why he decides to run again. But I suspect that that whole thing is all just going to fizzle out anyway. And the Americans don't like doing things to former presidents. So I suspect there'll be some deal done and he won't face any consequences. And he'll be aware of that before he stands there.
Yeah, there'll be a deal cut with Pence. So he'll pardon him.
Yeah. Yeah, I would imagine so. What about you, Emma?
I think that... there is going to be some big change in the relationship between China and the rest of the world. I think China is starting to flex its muscles more and more. And I think as everyone's taken their eye off the ball and America's gone mad and the EU are in fighting, I think China's going to spot its moment and try to impose its will before Russia gets too strong.
What is China's will?
Well, this sort of managed authoritarian capitalism is working very. But
why do they need? Why do they need to do anything different? Because in a sense, it's already working very well for them.
Well, I suppose
they need consumers,
I don't think it's not going to be about not having consumers. And let's face it, we've never stopped buying goods from anybody else who behaves badly. No. I think that they are going to start worrying about the rest of Asia and the changing political tensions there, and I think they're going to impose their will in some way. So that they are top dog in that corner of the world.
Mm.
There you go. That's a heavy one for you.
So interesting. Well, we shall see. We shall see. Lovely. Anyway, well,
thank you both, as always. We shall be back every now and again to stick our oar in, give our tap off and other ridiculous cliches. But just for now, just remains to be said to you both and to all our listeners, have a great new year. And we hope that 2019 is a little more chilled. All right, take care, guys.
All right.
Cheers.
Cheers.